because this side will be able to play back. So carry on. So yeah, we'll just carry on.
So it was originally meant to be a month of not speaking English, and I just let it go on until 90 days. It went through Chinese New Year. I stayed for Chinese New Year.
Would you like a coffee, by the way? Are you having any coffee or any breakfast? Here I am eating bacon. What am I eating? Ham or what do you call this?
Bacon, yeah.
I'm eating bacon and fried eggs and toast. And what's this stuff called?
Hash browns.
Okay, hash browns, right. Yeah. Did you miss all of this stuff while you were in China?
Yeah, sometimes I did. Sometimes I miss Chipotle for some reason.
Chipotle?
Yeah.
Dude, I miss whenever I was abroad. I miss Mexican food bad.
Yeah.
Hard to find anywhere else.
And tell me about the food.
Really hard to find.
Because in addition to learning the language, right? And the weather, you had to get used to the weather. And you had to get used to the road systems or the transport systems and everything like that. But you also get used to the food. Now they say Chinese people eat everything with the exception of the dog, the heart of a dog. Is this or the heart of a rat? Is this correct or wrong?
They do eat a lot more than, well, actually, in the U.S., you probably do end up eating a lot of these things. They just end up in things like hot dogs, or they end up in a form that is unrecognizable. But in China, you have dogs hanging by. I should be actually pretty specific. In certain regions of China, because if you go to somebody who's Chinese and you say, oh, you guys eat dogs, a lot of them will get offended. Because certain regions eat dogs, and they, you know, maybe they look down on other regions. China's so big, it's like, it's like, you know, Italian cuisine, Greek cuisine.
So are some, are those regions called, oh, they're the dog eaters by the other crowd?
Well, they,
or is that a joke, or is that not a joke?
I don't know that to be a joke. It might be kind of a stereotype, but it might be a little bit offensive. The poorest, where I did see dogs was in among the poorest regions of China. So I think that might be kind of a socioeconomic thing. But yeah, there's a general stereotype. You go there and they have dogs and rat, you know, whatever hanging around. And it's really, it's only when I came close to Vietnam, I went to a city called Nanning for Chinese New Year. That was when I walked in for the first time. I saw a dog hanging and being chopped up and things like that. But yeah, they have, depending on where you go, they, and the other thing I mentioned is, you know, here, you'll have ham that doesn't even look anything like the pig, or you'll have like this. I mean,
There's no way, if I didn't know what this was,
yeah,
there's absolutely no way I could tell that this came from a pig.
Right. In China, they tend to, the food tends to resemble more like chicken nuggets there. Like they don't have, there's no nugget over there. Everything has bones in it. You know, it's just much more true to its original form. And especially in Cantonese dishes, they don't like to season it too much. They like to let the natural freshness of the flavor. They're all about, like, different regions. Like, there's a salty region and there's a sweet region. They really like sweet dishes. And then there's the spicy provinces. And Cantonese dishes, which is near Shenzhen and Guangzhou, they really like freshness. So one of the most famous dishes is a chicken that just looks like it went through a cheese grater. It looks like you just sliced it into a grid, and it still looks like a chicken, but you can take a little piece of it off.
Right.
Perfectly cut.
Do they present it on the table as a...
They present it as a bird on the table.
Right.
It's just sliced perfectly, and then you take a piece of the bird, bone and all, the neck or whatever, the foot, and you just eat it. Just
and you eat the bone?
You eat it, and then you take out the bone.
Oh, yeah.
You don't chew on the bone necessarily. But, yeah, frog, same way, frog in a stew. There's a lot of dishes. Whereas over here, I feel like they've catered it more. Chinese food in the U.S. has been catered more to Americanized standards.
Oh, yeah. It would be the same in everywhere in...
Yeah.
It's probably the same everywhere in the world, actually, that they, you know, you translate the cuisine of one country into another, it gets commoditized for the video place.
Fish, I found, because fish had all the bones in it. Even when the fish was cubed and put in a dish with rice, you still were, like, pulling out all the little bones. And one of the stereotypes of foreigners in China is that they don't like bones. I mean, because you're not used to it so much, and you go there, and you're always...
Is it also that, these bones get strewn all over the place then, or are they all put tidily into containers?
You get a little separate dish and you put it on the dish.
Right.
You get a little like side sauce in it, and you, that's the bone sauce. It's like a garbage tray.
Wow.
Hunan food, Sichuan food, Beijing food, they're all different enough. Like North China, their staple is noodles, and South China.
Hey, bye bye. Bye bye. Come here. I gotta say bye bye. We're just saying goodbye to each other. And, yeah, in the Far East, yeah. And you said China was as big as Europe, but it's actually many times as big as Europe, isn't it? Does it feel enormous, or does it feel just like a series of localities?
It's very big, but it's big in a similar way that the U.S. is. The eastern part of China is very concentrated, it's very urbanized, and then you have this vast frontier where everything's a lot more spread out. So yeah, the area of China is landmass, much like Canada, much like Russia, much like the U.S. There are parts of it that are sparsely populated. And western China is, cities are much fewer and further in between.
Does it feel like one country, one empire, or does it feel like a federation?
The parts I never really went too far west. It's kind of actually hard to get into Xinjiang province, which is the northwest, the more Turkic people province, and Tibet. It's also hard to get to because they kind of shut that off a little bit to foreign tourism or foreign travel. But everything from middle China east, the predominant ethnicity is the Han Chinese. There are minorities. I mean, you read somewhere there's like 50 minorities in China, but it's so homogenous in terms of the people. The Han Chinese is the clear majority wherever you go, that I think if only for that reason it felt like it. I mean, there are differences, like in the north they tend to be taller and stockier, in the south they tend to be more petite, but they're still all kind of Han Chinese. It's kind of like northern Europe, they tend to be more blonde, and south Chinese more, you know, blonde.
Right, no, we'll interrupt. We'll stop because Molly would like to talk to you, but but look, that's wonderful. I mean, just one. I mean, you're a very organized and purposeful person. Had you ever practiced doing anything quite as with such focus as that before, on a different topic altogether, even when you were young or anything?
I learned web design that way. I just picked up a book and tried to learn it, which Chinese is a little bit different because I didn't learn from a book. I've learned many languages at many different times in the past to a certain extent, but I always had a job during the day or I was at school, and so I would learn it to a certain extent, but then I would never really do the full immersion. And so when I left my job in finance, I decided if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. Now's the time to do it. I have the free time. I can spend months immersing myself. So I'm just going to go both feet in. And, you know, in the past I learned Hindi because I had a lot of Hindi friends. I would speak Hindi with them. I had a Hindi roommate, an Indian roommate, and we would speak Hindi at home and things like that. But I learned from Rosetta Stone. I also learned only an hour every day or something like that. It was not me putting my entire being into this project and seeing, can I really become fluent in the language? Because I feel like a lot of people just think that they can't do it because they learn it in high school and then they can't speak it, or they never go to the country, or they have too many other priorities competing. I said, I want to become as close as humanly possible to being fluent for me, my own goal. I want to know what it's like to dream in Chinese. I want to know what it's like to not even think about what I'm saying. I want to know what it's like that after 45 days into my 90-day experiment, somebody spoke to me in English on a bus, and it was one of those foreigners, and I didn't want to rebuke him. And when I switched into English, Chinese words would come out and litter my English.
And that did happen?
And that happened. And
after 45 days?
After 45 days of just speaking Chinese. And when I came back to Chicago after the 90 days, it happened then. For like a day. I mean, it was quick to get out of that. But the that made me know that I was no longer thinking about translating my head.
I was telling my mother tells this story in the family that her two brothers went to Irish college, right, in a place called Ring in Ireland, right? For a year, they went to a school away from home, like a boarding school. And when they came back after that year, they could not speak English. They actually, she says, now this is many, many years later, right, that they actually couldn't speak English when they came back.
Wow.
So, I mean, now I suppose that means that for the first few days they struggled, you know, until the brain. I found myself when I, and I won't, we won't talk about it now, but I had an immersion experience in France as a teenager for 6 weeks, in which English, French was the only language, right? But I meant for about 3 of the weeks I didn't say a word, but I gradually became able to understand everything.
Yeah.
And but I would then find myself using words there was no English equivalent of the word. Like sympathique would be the simplest one to remember.
Uh-huh.
It's impossible to translate sympathique into English,
uh-huh.
right? There would be equivalents and guesses, whatever. But sympa in French is a word you'd refer to a certain kind of way somebody is.
Yeah.
And I couldn't to this day tell you. I would know the elephant came in the door, but I couldn't describe the elephant, you know?
Well, there's a lot of, like, Schadenfreude is another common one, a German word that we just use in English because there's no better way to describe that unique kind of shame that comes with finding happiness in others' failures. Like, that's the way we say it.
That would
English.
Be just too but long. You couldn't say that in
but
a
there's
word.
There's a lot of words like that in Chinese, too, where they just have a succinct way of describing some emotion or something that you just don't have in English. And the other way around, when you're trying to speak in Chinese, you have to learn to say things in the long way that we just have a simple way to say in English.
Oh, I have one more question to ask you that I must ask you. So, look, you obviously have done other languages before. How helpful or how much of a difference did it make to your ability to acquire, your ability to be able to live in Mandarin, that you had already, you know, learned several languages?
I think it made a decent difference because I learned French in high school, but I never went to France. We were going to go to France, but that was canceled because of the war in Iraq or something. Like, people were... There was a little bit of French animosity, and the trip got canceled, I guess. So I never made it to France to this day. Then I learned Spanish in school, and that one I decided I'm not going to take 1 year after another in Spanish. So I decided I'd get a book, and I learned from a book on my own, and I entered high school third year Spanish directly. And then halfway through third year, I skipped a fifth year. And that was just from a book.
Right.
And then later on, but that's incomplete because my listening ability in Spanish was horrible. I didn't listen to tapes or anything like that. So the next time, I dabble in Portuguese, I dabble in German, but I didn't have enough of a reason because I only went to Brazil for like a week, and then afterward I no longer had the motivation. So that's how I learned motivation is key. So with each language I learned, something else is key to me learning it. You know, with Spanish I learned I needed the listening ability. With Portuguese I learned it. I need the true motivation. I can't just learn it on a fly just to go to Brazil and then maybe go back someday, or maybe go to Mozambique, or maybe go to Portugal. I really needed the benefit out of it. I want to interact with people. I really needed a true goal other than just learning for learning's sake. German, same thing. And then I learned Hindi, and I was like, okay, here I am. I'm in Salt Lake City. I'm surrounded by a lot of people. I was at a Wall Street firm. There's a lot of people from New York that went to Salt Lake City to help grow the office, and then there were a lot of people from the Bangalore office that came, and then there's a lot of the Mormons in Salt Lake there, so there were these three different people, and because the Mormons have their own social life, their own family life, the people who are single in their 20s and want to hang out, you got the New Yorkers, the East Coasters, and then you got the Bangaloreans or the Indians. And so a lot of my friends are Indian, and they're from all parts of India, and they're the way they might communicate with each other, even though one might be from Karnataka and one might be from West Bengal. Everybody pretty much knew Hindi, and so they would kind of chat in Hindi, and I decided, you know what, I'm going to learn Hindi. And I learned the script, and I learned all of that, and I feel like I got farther with Hindi than the other ones because I knew that real conversation, and this is what I learned from Hindi. You know, from Spanish I learned the listening ability is important. From Portuguese the motivation is important. From Hindi I learned that real life conversation trumps everything. And I started by learning from a book. But I realized people started telling me, you sound like a newscaster, or you sound like the person on the airplane that tells you all the instructions, the safety instructions. You're using too formal of words.
Right.
And you're not using, you don't know the slang and how people talk. And so I switched gears and I decided I'm going to speak Hindi at home with my with my roommate, or I'm gonna speak it whenever I can, or if I'm chatting on IM with work, I would talk to some of my Indian colleagues just in Hindi and start to get things automated like that in my head. I never quite got full enough with that because I never quite had the full 24 hours of just speaking Hindi. But I got a lot farther with Hindi in a lot shorter time than I did with any other language. And so by the time I came up to the precipice of I'm going to do Chinese, I'm going to pick a language that is, you know, most people think is one of the harder languages. You have a character set, it's not a Roman alphabet, you have a lot of sounds that don't even exist in English, plus you have all the tones you have to care about. And I know all these other things from all these past, you know, the pronunciation's important. I learned that from Spanish, by the way. Like,
right.
First chapter, first book, pronunciation, get that down pat, and then move on, because if you try and fix your pronunciation later. So I learned all these little lessons from all these other languages, but by the time I got to the precipice of learning Chinese, I was like, I don't have a game plan for doing this, but I have confidence. And I think that made, and it might have been just stupid confidence that got me in a lot of weird and funny situations. And now, if I were to do it again, I would do it differently, but still.
I have to stop you because your next interview is coming up.
Okay.
Right? She's just arrived on the left-hand side, and I can't hug you, but Eric Strauss, look, thanks a million. That has been stunning, and I will listen to this. Can I share it with other people?
Yeah, sure.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Now you better go and talk to Molly.
Okay.
Right? Thanks a minute.
Yeah. And this is the when I was talking yesterday, you know, and saying